Hello, everybody. Welcome to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, sitting in the Mid-City Cafe with...
this guy that just recorded like 20 minutes of this primo interview.
7 minutes. We just wasted 7 minutes of a very fascinating interview with Adam Friedland.
Yes.
We have learned that Adam is from... born in L.A., moved to Vegas as a small child. Is this correct?
Yes.
High school in Vegas. After high school, a year in Israel.
A year in Israel.
Zionist movement, part of that political group.
Yeah, you can say that. It was mainly just Jewish kids trying to hook up with each other and hang out. And a lot of, like, weirdo kids that, like, weren't as... like, I was, like, such as... like, in my high school, I was kind of like a nerd... not a nerd.
But you were the funny guy in high school.
I was, like, sort of the funny guy in high school. And then at camp, I was, like... I was a stud.
Were you a stud?
Yeah, that's where I learned the ropes.
A lot of hand jobs in it.
Yeah, well, no comment. I mean, I might be running for judge one day, so...
you are a political man. You went to GW.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Like, obviously, I want to preface this by saying that I believe that ideologies are always changing, and my ideologies have always changed, but, sort of my experience was, of going to Israel, was I lost, kind of a lot of my inclination to be religious. I mean, I consider myself to be Jewish culturally. I'm incredibly Jewish in terms of, you know, I'm a neurotic white guy.
No, these are your Jewish stereotypes, though.
Sure, but I think that...
there's nothing in any Jewish text that says be neurotic.
No.
Enjoy
comedy.
Well,
no, it's kind of enshrined into the social ethic, I think. You know, like, there are values that are held, like education, you know, study.
By the way, Adam's funny. He's been on the show. That's why we're doing this interview. Sorry, we lost that as well. This is part two.
I think the last one was better, just so everyone...
it was much better. It was so fascinating. I was heavily involved. We just tried to summarize 7 minutes and 30 seconds. It's not working so much.
No.
You are smart. You graduated at 23, is that right? 23?
I graduated in 3 years after my year. So I went to GW for 3 years.
So then you graduated at 22.
Yeah,
you're
22.
24 now.
On time. Yeah.
You took the GREs recently.
I took the LSAT.
You took the LSATs recently.
Yeah.
You've been accepted to law school.
Not yet. Well, I took them at the end of college, but
And you deferred.
I'm going to reapply, I think.
Why? Why did you defer?
I think that it was a combination of things. I think that... right now, the choice to go to law school, especially in our economic times, is a pretty big choice, especially financially.
Absolutely.
I went to GW and I signed on loans when I was 18 years old, and I didn't really know what those loans meant.
Are you paying those loans off now?
I'm paying them off now, and then I have the prospect of facing another something like $200,000 in loans.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm doing comedy.
You're a new guy to comedy, which is crazy because you're very funny.
Thank you.
You started in February of 2011.
Correct.
It's August of 2011.
Yeah.
And you're one of two funniest people in DC. And
Thank you.
Grew up a comedy nerd. You said, like
sort
in
of,
SNL, watching a lot of Premium Blends.
Yeah. Monty Python was pretty much the first love of mine. My parents are immigrants. They're from South Africa.
Really?
Yeah. And they're from Cape Town. And
have you been?
I have been when I was a little kid. I haven't been back in a while. I really.
Do you want to go back?
Oh, I definitely do. I want to go back now with my family. Now that I'm older, to sort of
like remember.
No, yeah, but also kind of like I can appreciate it more because I'm, you know, in the transition into adulthood.
Okay.
I did a similar trip with my family a couple summers ago to London, which is where both my parents went to college.
Wow. You're cultured.
I guess so. I think that's, like, growing up, that's why... I'm not cultured. I think that I always sort of, growing up, felt different. I grew up in Las Vegas, which was a red state. It was a lot of Hummers. It was a lot of... you know, the economy was incredibly good at the time.
Yeah.
And subsequently, it's, the bottom has fallen out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went home, a couple weeks ago. Home is still Vegas. My parents live in Vegas. You know, I saw houses in my neighborhood with the lights off and,
yeah,
you know, foreclosures all around. Like, I think, you know, my, and it's, I guess it's having a really serious impact, you know, a real world impact on, mm-hmm. on my family, and I'm kind of seeing it myself. And but I always, when growing up, I kind of saw myself as better than everyone. I think I had
this makes sense. Continue.
I had sort of this air of superiority because I think maybe my parents were foreign and they exposed us to art and they exposed us to things that they found valuable, like you know, culturally valuable.
What do your parents think of your decision to do comedy? Do they know?
They do know, and I think that they support it. I think that they're also mindful of the fact that we're in precarious economic circumstances
right
now.
So do you think if it was still in like it was still boom time, you'd be in law? They'd be pissed that you're not in law school.
No, I think that they respect my decision to.
Have they seen any of it?
They've seen it. Yeah, they listened to the podcast a few weeks
really?
Ago.
What do they think
of me?
Yeah, of you, not me. I don't care what they think of me. They're not my target demo.
I don't know. I think that they see potential.
What did you do then? I think you did your stand-up.
I did like the entourage.
When you did your entourage, you did your Natalie Portman, which I bleeped out. I don't know if you listened to that.
that was funny.
Adam's going to be on any DC show that he's in town for that he wants to be on. He's hopefully Adam will end up being the show's Chris Elliott to David Letterman. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, a lot of people don't know what that means. I say you're one of the funniest people in D.C. and not comedians in D.C. because I don't necessarily view you as a stand-up, but more of a performer. I have yet to see you do the exact same act.
No, I don't have a set.
You don't have a set, but you can easily fill 20 minutes.
I could fill like an hour of bullshit.
Why? I still don't understand why you went up. You were the funny kid in high school. I get that. You've always known how to talk to people. I get that. But what in February of this year made you want to go on stage?
I think that I was facing sort of this prospect of going to law school in 6 months, and there was kind of like this urge that I suddenly had to, I don't know, fill this need of mine to kind of express myself in a public, very naked way.
Do you feel like you are expressing yourself?
No.
Do you think you do any personal material?
Or
are you just not that kind of comic?
I don't think that I can say what kind of comic I am after 6 months.
That's fair. But who do you want to? Who are the people you look up to?
The people I look up to are Louis C.K. You know, I liked when I was in high school. I was really into Dave Chappelle.
Okay.
I don't know. I think that Louis C.K. is sort of on another planet.
Well, yeah. I mean, yes, he is our Beatles. We get that. Every comic now kind of feels like ashamed to say Louis C.K. is my favorite.
Really hyperbolic, and I speak pretty much 70% of the time in hyperbole, so I'm not going to be afraid to say this. But we are special. We are lucky to be living in a time with such a special talent.
Absolutely.
Producing such a profound workload.
See, I think we're not. I think this will now be the norm.
That's what I don't have the balls to do. You know, I can go on stage and be funny, and I can do things that'll make people laugh because I know what makes people laugh because I've done it my entire life. Like, I used to put on shows when I was in elementary school for my family in the living room.
Did you name the shows?
Well, this show has subsequently been named, and it's sort of pejorative, the Adam Friedland Show, which is this zone I get into during social interaction where I just can't get out of my own movie, and I just start, and my friends get so frustrated with me. They get so frustrated with me, and they torture me about it, and sometimes it's deserved, and sometimes it's not. But going back to how I view stand-up, like I think that I'm going to start, and I've been writing material that is real.
Really?
And that has authenticity.
Have you tried it out yet?
No, I haven't.
Why not?
I just haven't found the right venue.
Because I've seen you, I think I was there the first night you did Entourage.
Yeah.
And you were writing it right before you went on stage.
I was writing No, I did. I did Entourage at the BYT.
Yeah, I was there that night, and I don't think you were writing that night.
I sort of wrote that on the metro coming home from work.
Yeah, like you're. It's not like you can't just go up with a new idea. Why are you holding back on the personal stuff?
I don't know. I feel like from what I've heard from a lot of comics, I mean, it takes a while to find your voice.
Absolutely, but. Do you want to ever know your voice, or do you want to be able to do character work the entire time?
No, desperately. I think that that is what comedy has the capability of, what stand-up has the traditional stand-up has the capability of being, which is kind of an untethered vision of reality.
There's two versions of the traditional view of stand-up. It's the Mark Twain, I'm the guy on stage telling the story, and sure. I'm in the story. That's number one. He's the first stand-up comic. But then there's also the vaudeville guys that just recycle jokes for 50 years and have a career. Mm-hmm. So there really isn't a traditional... I mean, Jerry Seinfeld's a traditional comedian. Do you know anything about his life? No, you know...
No,
and
I respect that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. You obviously know a lot about Louis C.K. You know what you want. They want you to know.
I know it, I guess so.
So why do you feel the need that you have to be exposing yourself to be, I guess, fulfilled?
Because I feel like that's, I mean, I feel like that is a higher form of artistic expression.
But isn't a laugh a laugh? Does it really matter?
I think it does.
Why?
Because I think that you can, you know, there are things that people will laugh at out of ignorance. You know, here's a perfect example. I saw, my sister... And I talked about the Bruno movie when it came out.
Yeah.
Okay, and the joke, I think, I'm a huge Sacha Baron Cohen fan. I think where a lot of the characters come from. I used to watch it on Sunday nights with my family.
You do a lot of characters, that's what
you're
talking
about. Yeah, and I think like Monty Python and Sacha Baron Cohen and SNL and like mm-hmm. a lot of sketch that I was exposed to. I think that's where I kind of got that inclination. What was I saying before that? I completely lost my train of thought.
Character versus role.
Oh, yeah. But I think that for me, I think that there's a certain perspective that you get in life. Like at 24, it's difficult to have that perspective. I think that Louis C.K.
I think Louis C.K. is essentially like the Jordan of comedy. Now everybody thinks they got to do... Like, you got to dunk from the free throw line. You could just score the basket. That's what matters. The way you score points doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I think that you should have matters. I think that this is what I was saying before I got off track. I think that when I was okay, so I saw the Sacha Baron Cohen movie,
the Bruno movie,
and I talked to my sister about it, and she saw it with some of her friends in Las Vegas, and some of them were sort of bro-y, a little bit, you know, whatever. And so they saw the movie together, and they were all laughing. Everyone was laughing, but they were laughing because they said, "Oh, it's so gross that he's being so gay." And they were laughing out of prejudice. When in actuality, his joke was making them laugh out of their own prejudice.
Of course, but so what? A laugh. Is a laugh, is a laugh. And I don't think that movie was mean to anyone.
I don't think that movie was mean to anyone. I think that sometimes...
If anything, the movie was mean to mean people.
Sometimes you can get a laugh, but I don't... I think that the most valuable laughter is something that sort of comes out of the human experience. And I think that comics that are able to do that, like Doug Stanhope or... Louis C.K.
Yeah, Stanhope doesn't have jokes. He just has, like, brilliant points of view.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, my general view on existence, this is big, guys. We're getting real broad. It's like, you know, like, we're all on Earth for a finite amount of time, and we all share the same experience, which is mortality.
You sound exactly like Louis C.K. and Carolla right now.
Sure, sure.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay, yeah, and maybe it's because I agree with them, but, like, I think that within that there's sort of a sinister joke to life, you know?
Yes, obviously.
A very dark, sinister joke. And I think that the people that can disarm that and make light of it and sort of bring humor out of that are the geniuses.
Okay.
I think those, I mean, I think...
And that's what you want to be doing.
Maybe. I mean, I see myself doing stand-up and performance for the rest of my life. I don't know...
Do you really see yourself going to law school and then going up on stage at night?
I think that's the only way I could... That's
rude. And then die.
And then die of a 45. Drug overdose. I think that's the only way I could stay sane, really. It's just become...
Both?
If I... You know, I'm intending on going to law school next year.
Yeah.
And I think that...
So you're given like a year of honest to God, like, push.
I'm
getting better.
Push.
Developing.
Yeah. But I've sort of realized in this last year, like, that's it takes a shit ton of luck to get
success.
No, it
success. Doesn't. No, shut
you
up.
You don't think so?
Absolutely
I
not.
I think there are a lot of talented people out there.
Yeah, and they will get their due.
Like, if I got the Hannibal Buress deal, you know, like...
How did Hannibal Buress get that deal?
By being amazing.
Yeah, it took 7 years of nonstop. He was going up 400 times a year.
Yeah.
He was hitting 3 open mics in Chicago before he moved to New York.
And I don't know if I have 7 years. I mean, I have student loans. I don't have 7 years.
There's
and it's
no
really
luck
sad.
With Hannibal. He
what?
Worked his ass off. That's why I don't like the luck thing. It's just, you're doing
no,
what you need
but
to
I'm
do.
Saying, what I'm saying is, like, yeah, I probably wouldn't, if I got a development deal or got a job writing for SNL or 30 Rock, whatever, like, obviously... I would reconsider, but I think that the trajectory that I'm on and all the work that I've put forth...
You don't want to lose that.
I don't... I'm not ready to part ways with that unless there's something that... You know, it's shitty. It's really a shitty...
Dilemma?
No, I'm part... I like to think that I'm part of a larger issue in this country, which is... how education, higher education, has become commodified. And how I signed on loans as an 18-year-old, which I'm responsible for paying back right now, without realizing what that meant. And
why
yeah,
do you worry so much about money?
Why do I worry about money?
Yeah, why do you worry so much about
because
money?
Because if I default on my loans, then my parents have to pay my student loans, and then it fucks their credit.
Okay, but once
you know, I'm part of a family. You know, my parents are immigrants. You know,
okay.
they came from South Africa, and they, you know, I think that
I'm not saying you should default on your loans. I'm
not saying that either. And I think that, you know, to get political right now, I don't know if you guys have in TV land or
in
internet land out there have been reading the news, but the next bubble after real estate is education.
Yeah.
I mean, people aren't going to be able to... You can't foreclose on a human being. There's no leverage. You can file bankruptcy.
Yeah.
You can move to another country.
Mm-hmm. There's no debtor's prison anymore.
There's no debt... Well, if you buy a house you can't afford, you can fuck your credit,
yeah,
and you can move out, and you'll be fine. You won't owe that money anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But if you sign on an education, like, I loved politics. I wanted to come to D.C. There weren't the state education prospects in Vegas weren't that good. If I lived in California or
mm-hmm.
Michigan or a state with better public education, I'd probably go to the state school. My family... made incredible sacrifices.
So you seem like a very family-oriented man.
Yeah.
With a lot of anger.
No. I don't think anger. I don't think it's anger. I think that it's...
you seem to be very angry at the current system.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's despicable. I think it's despicable. But the thing that I think is pretty sad is that in the 60s, you know, we saw our parents. We saw the boomers try to fight the system,
mm-hmm.
right? We saw, like, and it's, you know, people debate how much they were trying to fight the system and how much they were just trying to get, you know, fucked up at Woodstock and get laid,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that we're in this sort of, this age where where we can accumulate information and absorb information at a schizophrenic rate.
Yeah.
And we... are incredibly jaded by everything. I think that...
Absolutely.
I think that the reason my generation doesn't fight back is because we all owe our student loans. I think that's part of the biggest reasons existing.
It's sense that we owe... Yeah, I feel like we were beat before we even tried. But there's nothing wrong with that. I think I've come to this realization where I just don't care anymore. I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to die. That's the only definite.
Mm-hmm.
So I might as well fucking try. And
yeah.
then don't have a kid until you have money. Like, that's just how I'm going to live.
Yeah.
Pay all the bills as I can. Be as nice as I possibly can. Live with the anger. It's always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But until I'm rich, fuck it.
Yeah.
There's nothing like, wrong with that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot wrong with it, but I don't feel like there's another option.
No, I mean, I get to turn this on you. Like, I admire, like, I think something I admire about the podcast, I admire about you is that...
Oh, shut up.
I gotta say, like, I admire, you know, the fact that you have dreams, and you have defined dreams.
I'm very driven.
And you're pursuing them.
I have dreams, but I'm not as funny.
You're not as funny.
I'm not as funny as you. I know that, and I've accepted
What's
that.
Your goal?
A talk show host on TV within 4 years.
Within 4 years.
That's the goal. 4 years for TV, 2 years for radio.
Never?
Ideally following Ferguson.
Okay.
But realistically, something more like Spike or Fuse.
But don't you think that they would, like, consider giving it to, like, Marin or Mulaney or someone like that? Like a late night spot?
Absolutely, yeah. That's why I said 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I had...
Absolutely, but Marin's too old. It's the same. They're going to go with a younger demographic.
Sure.
If they're going to follow Ferguson. This is assuming that they're going to want a 1:30 a.m. talk show.
Yeah.
Probably a half-hour format, but I'm fine with that. I don't want 10...
Like a Carson Daly type of
format? Yeah, and that I actually really like Carson Daly's format. It's a brilliant format.
Mm-hmm.
And
I haven't watched much of his show.
Great, they took it out of the studio. He's not a bad guy at what he does. He's just not... great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's extremely likable, but he has absolutely no edge. He doesn't need to have edge. And I think that's the problem with it. And I think Fallon is proving that you could have no edge and be a very successful late night host.
Sure.
I, on the other hand, am very
I think the thing that the advantage you have in what you're doing right now is that we could really see with Fallon at those early episodes, he was struggling.
Oh, God, yes.
He was really struggling.
Absolutely.
But he's really grown into his own, and I think that if you keep doing this...
Yeah, that's why I said 4 years. Yeah. Like, I am not TV ready. I know that. I need to lose weight still. I need to have a good haircut all the time. And these things matter. No one
wants to see
an obese man on television. No one wants to see some weird hair on television. I have to be able to shave every day. You know what I mean? These things actually matter.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just buck the entire system.
Mm-hmm.
You can't change the meaning of a word. You can do small things within that system, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a huge leg up that I'm a white male.
Sure.
How many late night show hosts are there that are white males? 95%.
Arsenio?
Is he still on? There's Chelsea Handler. Lopez, he's gone. There's no one left.
Chelsea Handler.
Just Chelsea Handler, and that's it.
Chelsea.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
There's
a lot wrong with that, but for me to rail against the system, and I'm not going to complain about having a leg up, so why should I complain about the system? If anything, because of things like cable and podcasting,
what is it about the format that appeals to you?
I am not the most talented anything, but I like hanging out and talking to really interesting people. That's it.
Yeah, but you clearly have terrible taste if you're talking to me right now.
Fuck you. I hate that snaking its tail comedy bullshit.
Okay, but here's the thing.
No one knows how to take a compliment. I'm the same. I know that.
Okay. I've realized that in order to feel like you can make it in anything, and especially in show business, you have to have... everyone has the sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
Like, they have their spot out there. And it's kind of disconcerting to
me. Why?
Because I see a lot of people in D.C. that I think, you know... And I think comics are kind of... sometimes hostile to one another.
Oh,
because
God,
I think
yes.
that everyone sort of feels that way about themselves, and I don't know how to feel about myself.
I see
because
the
of that
problem with that, and I have that too. But at the same time, it's actually a good thing. Here's how I feel: I'm going to get what I deserve.
Yeah.
Now, if it doesn't happen, did I deserve it? Absolutely not. Sometimes it's time, and sometimes
it's not.
You don't
think so?
No, because here's what I'm trying to do. Let's say I don't get on late night TV. So what? I'm trying to carve out a niche like this. This thing, if this thing can pay the bills, I want to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
TV is the ultimate goal because that's what I grew up watching.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the whole Conan Tonight Show thing. It doesn't matter. It's just a title. Just being on TV, trying to connect with people, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
To think that I already know, we're all narcissists. We all are. We are using amplified sound and a light to make people pay attention to us. That's insane.
Well, I think that it also has to do with our generation, our general generation. Like, we were some of the first kids that grew up in households where parents, I'm not saying they did this or not, but parents were told that loving your child is a necessary part of childhood.
Yeah, I know.
And I think that there is a lot of good that comes about it as a result of that. But I think the negative side, because that's just naturally how I look at things maybe, is that we have this concept, everyone in my generation has this concept that they're special.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that could I think that what that prohibits us from doing, especially comics, especially comics, is from having any concept of the collective, having any larger concept about how one's own actions affect the greater masses.
That's true. That's kind of why I like
That's why comics will be the last people to ever organize into a guild or a union or any type of...
That's very interesting,
And that's why they keep getting fucked over by clubs and by the system because they don't care about one another.
I see what you're saying, but I don't think you could just have an overarching like this is why it doesn't work because UCB proves that wrong, Death Ray proves that wrong, my friends, comedians you should know prove that wrong. There's six guys, a weekly show, sold out every week, debuted at number one on iTunes. They prove that you can do it. But at a certain point,
what's his name, Chappelle's friend?
No. You're thinking of Neil Brennan.
Yeah. What is that thing?
I don't know, but the comedians you should know.
His ex-friend.
Yeah. Comedians you should know is Joe Cogallon, Michael Sanchez, Drew Michael, Mike Leibowitz.
The Chicago guys?
These are all Chicago guys, and I forgot where I left off, and I feel awful because all Danny Callis, who's the last one? Oh, Marty DeRosa. Marty was in a film of mine. All six of those guys, completely different styles of comedy. All of them are great. And sooner or later, they're going to be tired of it because you're on stage alone. Yeah. You don't need to be in a collective. It's the most... You should be alone. The guys you like, they're alone in their head. Mm-hmm. They're not trading jokes. Like, they're not...
No, sure.
So, you don't... This does not need a union at all.
I think that the business format, I think that it makes it incredibly hard, especially for people like me that can't afford to, like, leave my job because I have... You know, like...
Okay.
It makes it hard for people to make a living.
It makes it hard for everybody, but... Once you do, but it also weeds out the people that are weak. It also weeds out the people that aren't funny, that are just doing it as a hobby.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a good thing.
I don't think that that's necessarily a trade-off.
Why?
I think that, because, I mean, there could be a system that could be in place in order to make sure that...
Going to be in its pointless.
When I hear about... I was like gung-ho on going to New York, doing comedy, just fucking doing it, right? Yeah. And I hear stories of people paying $10 to get on an open mic.
That's here, though, too.
Is that here?
Well, Riot charges for their open mics on Tuesdays.
You have to pay to get in?
Yeah, to watch an open mic, you gotta pay
$10. Do you have to pay to perform?
I don't know if you have to pay to perform. Okay.
Well, this place is closing. We're at a cafe.
So we're going to walk a little bit and close it up. So here's an ad for something. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. I'm butting in to let you know that I write a weekly column for this website called Brightest Young Things. The name of the column is called Behind the Desk, and it's pretty much whatever is applicable to this talk show or talk shows in general, things that I find fascinating. It goes up once a week at brightestyoungthings.com, and you can find every column at youmethemeverybody.com. So if you haven't been to the website in a while, that's an excuse to go. Once again, it's called Behind the Desk. It's a weekly column I write, and I'd really appreciate if you gave it a glance. Thanks for listening, and back to the show. Welcome back to the show. Adam and his roommate are convincing me that I will start smoking pot at 35.
Oh, no. You can't say that on the internet.
Why?
Because I'm going to run for judge one day.
Oh, why do you want to be a fucking judge?
Can you not put this on?
No, I'm definitely putting this on. I'm not saying that you're high. I'm saying that you think I will be high at 35.
I think that you just strike me as one of those guys that, like, at 40, you're like, oh, groovy.
Never groovy.
I've been missing.
No, I don't think so. You think I'm going to be, like, Joe Rogan or something?
Joe Rogan. You know, you heard he was high for all of Fear Factor.
Yeah.
From, like, the first half of season one.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Hilarious.
That's not hilarious. That's just what he did to cope.
I guess so, yeah.
No, I'm good. I don't want to.
No,
I'm
it's
not
good.
Against people that do. I just don't have any desire to.
I don't have any desire to either, internet.
Good. Whatever. I don't fucking care. All right. You wanted to wrap this up. We walked from Mid-City to your place. We should have just did it here, by the way.
Yeah.
It would have been a lot easier. Would have saved me $2.50 in iced coffee.
Whatever, dude. I'm jittery and pumped. Right now. That coffee is going through my veins.
You were railing against the system, against mainstream media, politics, etc. Yeah. Outside.
Yeah, I'm at the stage where I think I have all the answers in life, but have none.
That's good.
And I'm conscious of my fallibility.
That's good. Right? So is that going to change anything?
Is it going to change the world?
No, is that going to change your ideas of anything now that you realize you don't actually know anything?
No, I think that that is... I mean, I think that that's the first step. Like, I grew up as a kid that thought I was better than everyone else. And then I left home, and I was on the East Coast alone. And I sort of had these kind of feelings of alienation my freshman year.
Okay.
And I was like, sort of like... I was like listening to a lot of Radiohead at the time. And... yeah, the feeling of like being on a public transportation, feeling like just a face in the crowd, and it's incredibly.
That's Adam's roommate laughing at Adam.
I'm sorry. I think that really spoke to me at the time, and so yeah, I think that when I got to college, I started to realize, you know, you're not as special as you think you are, and that's fine.
Yeah, that is fine.
You're a human being. We're all human beings.
I don't know why this is so...
Join my cult, everyone.
I like how you have to ruin every pure thought you have with the joke. Yeah. Can't you just be real for once?
I can. It's a defense mechanism.
I know that.
Like everyone else.
Do you see a therapist?
No.
Would you?
Yeah, I don't look... No, I don't look down on it. I think I probably will one day.
Okay.
Just because, like,
you're
I think...
a judge.
I think that when you're a higher... When I'm a judge, yes. I think that when you're... you have a higher, like... like, what's it called?
I don't know.
Let me reformulate the sentence.
I think. What you're talking about, man.
No, I think that when you are more have a higher emotional intelligence, I think that you kind of do see a sort of dark side of existence.
Okay.
And I don't think it's wrong to process and unpack those feelings through conventional Western medicine. Can you cut all of this? Just cut the whole interview.
No,
actually.
What are you saying? Seriously, what are you trying to get across right now? You don't need therapy.
I'm gonna see a shrink because Woody Allen saw a shrink.
Is that the only reason why?
Yeah, of course.
I could write Manhattan if I see a shrink.
My therapist.
You've never sounded more Jewish. Nice shoes. How would you describe your shoes for the listener at home?
They're like suede,
brown loafers.
Yeah, they have laces. They're very conservative.
You're not a conservative man.
I think I'm conservative.
How so?
I'm just not like, I don't know. I'm not conservative at all.
Not at all. Look at where you live. You're the opposite of conservative.
Yeah, but it's fake, you know? It's like, I feel like...
Wait, where you live is fake?
No, it's real, man.
No, it's like, we're not like part of like a movement or like a scene. There is no scene. I don't think we buy into like scenes. We have different things at our apartment.
You've referred to your generation multiple times, and now you're saying there is no scene.
Yeah, because it's completely fragmented and self-centered.
Then there
are no scenes.
There are scenes. There are what, millions of scenes.
Like what?
Anytime there's three or more people, that's a scene.
I disagree.
All right, that's fine.
Are we a scene right now?
Yeah.
I guess so.
We're trying to document a moment in time about a certain thing. This is a scene.
I think that is... I don't know. I think we're just talking semantics right now, but...
That's a scene.
The
semantic scene. We're the Jewish comedian scene. Or just debating semantics the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
Listen what?
I think that if I'm not going to be like the president of the United States, I might as well just be a stand-up, right?
Is that really what you're going for now?
Yeah, either the president or stand-up, right?
Why not both?
Yeah, well, no.
Correspondence dinner, you open and close the evening?
I named my price, and they said it was a little bit too high, but they'd get back to me next year.
The correspondence dinner?
No, the
president?
The industrial military complex.
Jesus Christ. You were so gung-ho to do, like, the second part of this, and now that we've started, you're like, I don't want to do this.
No, it's just, like, I was really fired up when we were walking over here, because I was talking about, sort of how, we're in a recession right now.
Yes.
I think that it's fair to say that a lot of people graduating between 2008 and the present from college
mm-hmm.
could be labeled a lost generation, I think, certainly in terms of employment prospects. Okay. And I think that it's interesting to me the fact that there is no collective action within that generation to address some of society's problems. I think that we kind of feel jaded by everything.
Is that why you do a lot of commentary type stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, I was talking to my parents that, like,
they said about the Entourage stuff. They're like, that doesn't really...
resonate?
You know, that doesn't really resonate. And I was trying to say how I kind of view that as social criticism.
It is.
Yeah, I hope it is. I hope it is. I hope it's not just me being silly.
Even if it is you being silly, it makes people laugh, and that's all that matters.
I guess so. I mean, I don't know what stand-up is yet. I don't know what comedy is yet. I'm learning. Interviewing me right now is completely, like, this entire interview. I've just been talking out of my ass because I don't really know.
Do you think you won't be talking out of your ass 10 years from now? We're all talking
Maybe
out
not.
Of our ass.
Maybe not.
There's nothing anybody could actually tell anybody to make them better. They have to do it.
You can get good at talking out of your ass.
You can get good at talking out of your ass, apparently. Any final words of wisdom?
Ace Ventura, incredibly good at talking out of his ass. You like that?
No, I don't like that.
Final words of wisdom. If you're still listening at this point, you're an idiot.
No, don't do that. Don't. Oh, God. You're doing what everybody else does. That's boring. Just say thank you.
Brandon, thank you. Thanks
Fuck
for...
you. Not me. To the listener, thank you.
Thank you to the listener. And no, I want to thank you.
We're time to
fly. I wanna, can I thank you?
No, you can't. We're,
I'm going to... Shut up. I'm going to thank Brandon right now. This is the third time I've told him to shut up on a podcast. and I've done it three times. I think that you have seen something within me which may be real and which may not be real, but I certainly appreciate it. And I think that, you know, not that I'm against that type of lifestyle.
Comedy?
No, like homoeroticism.
Oh.
But it's just like
that's
not
where you're
my
going
thing.
With it?
Is that where?
That's where you went with a gay joke to end it. That's what you thought would be funny.
No, I didn't think that would be funny.
It's obviously not.
I wouldn't make those kind of jokes in front of my roommate.
Plug. You got any shows coming up?
No, I have
Fantastic.
Nothing.
Fantastic. Thanks for listening, everybody. Oh, no. Chicago, Whistler the 28th, Hungry Brain the 29th, Hungry Brain the 30th. Back in DC, September 2nd. Hopefully, Adam will be there.
Yeah, I will be there.
At the
Wonderland Bar.
The
only place that lets me get up.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a wonderful night.
Thank you.